You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. Today is Tuesday, the 17th of February, 2026. Thank you to the Radioactive Show 3CR's National Program on Nuclear Peace and Energy Issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio this morning, we've got Juliet and Elena. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
And happy Lunar New Year.
Yay. Yeah.
So,
happy Year of the Horse.
Yes, happy Year of the Horse. Do you both know what year you're born in?
Yes. Year of the Ox.
Oh, okay. Year of the Ox.
It's born in the Year of the Monkey.
Year of the Monkey.
To celebrate this morning, I brought my mug is the Year of the Ox. So you're here. Yeah, I only have two of the animals, and I think I have the ox and maybe the rooster is the other mug I have. But that was my celebration this morning.
Yeah, it's been so nice to see people celebrate in so many different ways with like fireworks and spending time with family and things like that, which is really cool. So yeah, if you celebrate Lunar New Year, wishing you and your family a year of happiness and prosperity.
I want to know from where are the fireworks?
Fireworks? There are Lunar New Year celebrations all across Nam every single year. The ones that I saw last night, I couldn't actually tell you a specific location, but my guess would be in the areas where there like are high numbers of Asian communities. So my guess would be like Footscray.
Yeah.
Or yeah, there are also every year festivals in like Sandown and Richmond. And places like that, yeah. I'm not personally.
You haven't been launching the fireworks.
Personally, no. Not. I'd be way too scared. Okay. And, you know, just while we're talking about things that are happening in February, if you were listening to the end of the Radioactive Show just now, you would have heard Michaela talk about 3CR subscriber drive. So yeah, we would encourage all of our listeners to subscribe to 3CR. As a subscriber, you do get to get involved with the station and have your say, and it helps us stay truly grassroots and independent. In terms of subscription prices, it's a tiered system. So it's $40 for concession, $80 if you're waged. If you're a band or organization, it's $150. And if you'd like to pay as a solidarity subscriber, then that's $300. So yeah, please get on that. You can do that via the website at 3cr.org.au, or you can give us a call at 94198377. And we talked a bit about, all the great things about being a subscriber last week. So, yeah, get onto that if you can. But coming up on today's show, at 7:15, we'll be joined by Marie Party, whose interview with Jennifer Burrell from Think Again we played last week, but we'll actually be speaking to Marie this morning to talk a bit more about the Maribyrnong Council's use of security patrols in Footscray. There is a speak out happening just before the town council tonight where councillors will vote on the use of the security program. So stay tuned, that's coming up at 7:15.
At 7:30, we'll be joined by Lucinda Thorpe, who is the Online Privacy Coordinator at Digital Rights Watch, and we'll be speaking about the proposed biometric data and digital identity document sharing between the Albanese government and the Trump administration. At 7:45, we'll listen to an excerpt from Caitlin, one of the presenters on Breadline on 3CR, from Monday, of on a report on the RoboDebt class action by the Gordon Legal, and explaining the background of the case and how it relates to them.
And then finally at 8 o'clock, we're going to listen to a conversation that I had with four artists who are currently exhibiting at Trocadero Projects in Footscray. And those artists are Namo Omar, Emma Salmon, Lara Olklu, and Alana Baxter, speaking about their exhibition Suck Words into Grime. And that's going to be a two-parter. We'll continue on at 8:15.
So stay tuned to 3CR Breakfast. We've got a massive show, but up next we'll bring you the news headlines. Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast, and these are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 17th of February, 2026. Independent Senator Lydia Thorpe has been cleared by the Australian Federal Police over comments she made at a Palestine solidarity rally in October. Speaking at the rally in Naam, the Gunai, Gunditjmara and Jabarong Senator drew parallels between the Palestinian struggle and that of Indigenous people here, saying she stood in solidarity because, quote, "we know what it's like to have a boot on our neck every moment that we are alive." She told the crowd that she would continue to fight for marginalised people, adding, "we stand with you every day and we will fight every day and we will turn up every day, and if I have to burn down Parliament House to make a point, I'm not there to make friends." The remarks were criticised by Coalition and One Nation MPs, prompting the AFP to launch an investigation. Senator Thorpe has defended her remarks, describing them as clearly a figure of speech and a metaphor for the pain in our communities and the urgent need to end genocide in Palestine and everywhere. The AFP has made no findings in relation to the Senator's comments, and no further action will be taken.
Also in the news, Injured Workers Support Network have called for a rally at the Parliament steps this Wednesday at 1 p.m, demanding for a meaningful code of injured workers' rights. In 2025, the Victorian government committed to introducing a code of claimant rights following a recommendation from Peter Rosen QC in his review of workers' compensation. The Code of Injured Workers' Rights would set clear and enforceable standards, ensuring workers are treated with fairness and respect, supported in recovery, and not re-traumatized by the work cover system itself. They will be rallying to ask members of Parliament for their support for the five key principles that they say must be incorporated into any code to ensure it effectively protects their rights, dignity, fairness, and respect. Clear, effective communication, access to prompt, appropriate, and evidence-informed medical care that supports recovery, and a safe and suitable return to work where appropriate, and the right to refuse unsafe or inappropriate duties, and an efficient worker-centered dispute and complaints process, including meaningful remedies if this code is breached. In other news, February the 13th marked 18 years since Kevin Rudd put forth a national apology to the Stolen Generations. This day was indicative of apology and the promise of forceful removal of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from their families to not occur again. Yet, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children today are still being removed from their families without justification, and the numbers are only increasing. A study at the University of New South Wales discovered that at the time of the apology, 9,070 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children lived out of home care. As of June 2024, this number has doubled to nearly 20,000, not including the thousands more placed on guardianship orders. Professor Newton from the UNSW has suggested this escalation reflects the ongoing failure of governments to confront systemic racism within child protective systems. The UNSW reports that Australia adopted a US-designed decision-making tool assessment, which has now been proven to be racially biased. As Professor Newton has further suggested, quote, today the closing of the gap target 12, which aims to reduce overrepresentation of Aboriginal children in out-of-home care by 45% by 2031, is failing. Real change requires governments to step aside and support Aboriginal-led rights-based anti-colonial systems of care.
Finally, in the headlines, two traditional owner groups in regional Victoria have begun treaty negotiations with the state government of Victoria as of last week. The Wadjobaluk Nations and the Tati Tati traditional owners in Northwest Victoria joined the Djadjawurrung and Bidwulmup traditional owner groups on the Treaty Negotiations Register. The Treaty Negotiations Register is the government record that entails groups or entities eligible to participate in treaty negotiations, including traditional owner groups and the State of Victoria. Baringi Gajin Lown Council, which represents the Wadjobaluk Nations, submitted their resignation to begin formal negotiations for a traditional owner treaty under Victoria's legal framework. The BGLC chairperson, Chris Harrison, said that achieving this was possible after generations of work from elders more than 30 years ago, who strove for recognition for their rights and connection to country as the traditional owners. Harrison further states, inclusion in this register is a beginning of a way to establish a treaty delegation to lead discussion on behalf of traditional owners, grounds in traditional owners' culture and guided by community values. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 17th of February, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo-woo!
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Hey everyone, this is Jen Kloer. I'm here at 3CR, Radical Radio, and it's just a little reminder that you might have forgotten to subscribe, so why don't you do it now? Jump on the phone 9419 8377 or online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe. Let's keep independent community radio alive.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. And just to echo Jen Kloer there in that announcement, if you can please subscribe to 3CR Community Radio to keep us truly grassroots and independent. We are joined this morning by Marie Pardee, who is a lead author of a report evaluating the Maribyrnong Council's use of security patrols to address social and health issues. And regular listeners of 3CR would have heard Marie speak to Jennifer Burrell on 3CR's Think Again. Well, Marie joins us again on the phone this morning to discuss the security patrols targeting of women in the Footscray area, as well as tonight's Speak Out at the Town Council meeting. Welcome to 3CR Breakfast, Marie.
Thanks, Mum.
So, like I said, our listeners heard an excerpt of you speaking to Jennifer from her program Think Again about the report, the background into it, and what's happening in the Footscray CBD area at the moment. So I was hoping that you could start by talking to us about the way in which patrols, security patrols, are disproportionately targeting women in the area.
Yeah, sure, Fung. This was a bit of a surprise to us, and we found this through our community research, that there was a really notable discriminatory impact on women, and there's, including one example of a serious case of violence by a male security guard towards a marginalised homeless woman. And this woman was known to local health services as experiencing mental health challenges and also had has a background of trauma. And so what we found was that the program, it was surprising really, but that what was observed was that, and this was also spoken about, was that the patrol reported that they were hesitant to physically engage or intervene with men, mainly out of a caution for their own physical safety, particularly if it escalated. But this has certainly not been the case with women. And the incidences of violence observation that we observed, that our community patrols observed, was that violence or aggression was directed at people the security team felt physically capable of overpowering, which kind of sounds reasonable, but in practice it was basically, it's directed much more towards women and physically vulnerable people. So, yeah, that was a surprising finding, and it was also surprising that they admitted it. So, maybe, I don't know, Paul, but maybe if I just tell you briefly a little bit about Sarah's situation, one of the case studies in our report, that might make it a little bit more stark for people about how this has occurred.
Yeah, definitely. And just before you do that, Marie, I will just put out perhaps just a content warning for listeners that the following anecdote does go into, just a bit of detail about violence against women. So, just take care when listening.
Thanks, Fung. Yeah, and this is just quickly, I'll just tell you a little bit about this one incident about Sarah, although it does contain Sarah's story as well. And she's been long-term sleeping rough in Footscray. She's relatively young. She's had repeated contact, actually, with the security patrol. And she does struggle with challenges of addiction and symptoms of psychosis. And one of the things that attracts negative attention towards her, particularly from traders and others, is that sometimes she is in what they consider to be underdressed, too loud, behaving shamelessly or, you know, unwomanly or whatever the word might be in public. And so this has exposed her to a greater risk of public encounter with the security and even with the police. Even more so when men just nearby are comporting themselves in the most erratic ways or similarly. So there have been a number of incidents, and one where she was actually manhandled by a security person who, to be fair, this security guard or the local laws team actually became concerned about her safety at one point after she'd been behaving erratically around some local businesses, and she moved onto the road. And the security officer tried to move her out of the road, but her previous associations with being physically restrained really exacerbated her state. But what was interesting was that shortly after that, she was sitting in the area, and the security guard came. He was probably frustrated, we presume, and accosted her while she was sitting in the mall, snatching the bottle of alcohol that she was drinking. And he then used aggressive force towards her. She was pushed onto the ground and held there. The police actually were then called and came to the scene, but they didn't come to the scene to offer any support to Sarah. They instead came with the intention of charging her. And what they did was what they might call a diversion tactic, I suppose. I'm not quite sure what this is in their handbook. But she was pretty dysregulated and also quite physically affected by this assault. And they took her to the train station and told her to leave Footscray for the day. And she was left alone, basically. She doesn't have a fight, she didn't have a fine. She was left alone in the Melbourne CBD in a state of distress. And no way to receive any support from the way she needed. So, yeah, this approach really didn't keep Sarah safe. It didn't really keep anybody safe. Mm-hmm. There was, mayhem around the area when it happened, and no care was offered. So, no capacity or expertise to work with somebody to de-escalate. To discern what they require, etc. So this is just one example of many observations that we saw, but it was surprising to us, as you said, that it had such a sort of obvious gender element to the actual patrol by security.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you and Jennifer were discussing in your conversation about what safety really means and who it's for when we have these sorts of law and order responses to maintain safety for people in the community. What does that actually mean? And I know online Footscray Community Response has a really good explainer to help people understand the difference between real safety that includes everyone rather than the securitization, which is what you were describing before. I might just move on a little bit, Marie, because I know that you do have a speak out happening tonight, and you did want to mention an update regarding the Maribyrnong Council. So what can you tell us about the council and their the latest updates regarding this program?
So the security program was the pilot program, or the trial, for 6 months. The 6 months is coming to an end, and tonight is the council meeting where they are deciding what to do with the program, what the way forward is. And so we're having, our group is having a speak out at 5:45 at Footscray Town Hall, and that's just prior to the council meeting. And so we're asking as many people who are concerned about these issues to come along and support the community at the speak out. We have received a report that will be going to council tonight. It's a report by the council officers recommending a particular change. So it's kind of interesting, actually. I think what they've realised, that what they're saying is they don't want to continue with the patrols, but what they want to do is replace it with what they call a council-led civic presence, which we don't know what the meaning is, and also they don't know what the meaning of it is either, because they said that they haven't decided what this is at the moment. But what's clear from our perspective is that the community pressure on them has brought them to a situation where they feel it's untenable for them to use the word security. And so now what they're talking about is safety and well-being. However, our real concern, as evidenced in this report, is that this may simply be a rebranding of what they're doing at the moment, and particularly given that there's no substance to this whole idea of council-led civic presence. They have actually really taken this big step of committing $500,000 or $450,000 per year, ongoingly, to this program of civic-led presence, which, as they admit in their own report, they don't actually know what this will look like. Mm-hmm. They don't know what it means. But the other thing is they based it on a report from a consultant they engaged, and those consultants said really that the community doesn't support this security approach, that while it might provide a little bit of short-term, it might be a bit of a short-term fix, it actually doesn't deal with the ongoing problems. So we're actually going to urge at the speak out that council ceases the security programs, and it also rejects this officer recommendation of allocating $500,000 a year to something they don't know anything about at this stage.
Mm.
So I think it's pretty... our real worry is that they are going to adopt the kind of City of Melbourne approach, which is bringing the security enforcement-based functions in-house so that they'll be run by council rather than a security firm. So, there's no consultation on this, and it's sort of like, okay, we've kind of got to step one, which is to raise questions about a security approach to social and health issues, but here we have either a rebranding or just a kind of unknowingness or unwillingness to know how it's best to deal with it.
Yeah, that's really interesting that they've got this new initiative with a new name, which does sound a lot softer, and yet there are no details. So, yeah, it just raises questions as to whether, like you said, that it is something with substance or it's rebranding. And, you know, it sounds like maybe they've just gone into damage control after receiving feedback from the community. And I guess that's why it's so important that there is a strong presence at the town council meeting tonight to ensure that community voices are heard. So thank you so much, Marie, for joining us on the show this morning to speak about it. It's such an important issue, and as you just sort of alluded to before, isn't just affecting one part of Melbourne, but we're seeing it pop up everywhere, even, you know, in St Kilda as well. So, yeah, hopefully we can speak to you again with an update after the town council and to see if we've got any more information about this new initiative. But for now, yeah, we really appreciate your time on the show this morning.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
We've been speaking to Marie Party from Footscray Community Response. You can join FCR at 5:45 this evening at Maribyrnong Town Hall for a speak out, where they'll then head into the council meeting together to ensure that the community is heard. You can find out more by going to footscraycommunity.net, or you can follow them at Footscray Community on Instagram. We'll be back with our next segment in just a moment.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Today we are speaking with Lucinda Thorpe, Online Privacy Coordinator at Digital Rights Watch, about proposed biometric data and digital identity document sharing between the Albanese government and the Trump administration under visa-free agreements. She comes on the show today to explain what this means for Australians and their privacy. Good morning, Lucinda.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show today to talk about this. We'll go straight into the information. The United States government, including the Trump administration and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, have proposed demands that Australia hand over biometric and digital identity documentation due to their visa-free arrangements. What does this mean for Australians and their privacy?
So our privacy is paper thin domestically, and now the US government and ICE can peer in on us as well. So it is quite bad for our privacy. And it's a serious step backward. Just last year, the government committed to passing about 100 privacy reforms. And this was after the UN Special Rapporteur on Privacy visited Australia and was like, whoa, you guys seriously need to update your privacy laws. Your privacy sucks. And this is just a major step backwards. Not only are we seeing the privacy reforms come through incredibly slowly, but we're now opening up Australians' privacy to the US as well.
Yeah, that can be definitely a big change and a big setback from, you know, what kind of already built on privacy. But what are these actual data types and personal information that the United States could gain access to?
So there is a lot. Under the proposed change, the US and ICE would gain access to users' social media histories. Now, this is incredibly revealing data. This can reveal a comprehensive profile of your political beliefs, your sexual orientation, gender identity, private communications, love interests, and secrets. Like, it's not just the data that you would find on your passport. Mm. It goes so much deeper than that. Beyond social media, it'd be fingerprints. It would be former names. This is a bit of a dog whistle for trans people, so targeting people who may have had name changes. Aliases as well, current and former nationalities, all of the data from your passport, facial images, criminal records, police records, immigration records, and incredibly concerningly, numbers from other identity documents such as Medicare and driver's license numbers, and if you have a digital ID, that as well.
Yeah, wow, that is like your whole life that can be now accessed by another government system, which is kind of very scary. And along those lines, it's like, what are your main concerns about Australians' biometric data being collected and shared with the United States through the digital ID systems?
Yep, so the digital ID would be hoovered up in that, as I said. And the Australian people did not agree to have their government data shared with the US when they signed up for a digital ID system. It's a total bait and switch of the Australian people, and we deserve so much better. Digital Rights Watch has been and remains critical of digital identity programs because of this ability to undermine human rights and enable surveillance. Beyond the content of what is shared, I'm actually quite worried about how it will be handled. So ICE contracts with some very shady companies who will also get their mitts on Australian data. Yeah. So Palantir could access your social media history, potentially your biometric information and your legal documents. This is the same Palantir who makes the information systems that facilitate the genocide of Palestinians. So they do not have your best interests at heart. Also contracted by ICE is Clearview. Clearview is a facial recognition database that scrapes images off the internet, social media, and now they'll have access to your legal documents. They could be scraping images off that as well. They compile this into a massive searchable database. And really concerningly, Clearview targets authoritarian regimes and policing to partner with, and then it offers them access to their database, which could now include perhaps images from your legal documents. Terrifying stuff.
Yeah, I think it's also really concerning that having even just one little bit of information is now going to be linked to all of these other documents and or things such as your social media history. It's maybe just your name or your passport, and all of a sudden, all of this information is accessible, which is pretty terrifying. And existing mechanisms such as the visa waiver program involve case-by-case data sharing rather than unrestricted database access. How do these new proposal demands differ from what is already set in place?
Yeah, so currently Australians travel to the US under something called an ESTA, which is a visa-free arrangement. And under this current arrangement, information is shared between the US and other ESTA countries when individuals are believed to have terrorist or organised crime ties. So like you said, it's on a case-by-case basis. Also, occasionally, fingerprinting is mandatory in some airports. So it's also on an airport-by-airport basis. The change is that all Australians considering going to the US and entering the US would be mandated to provide biometric information, government IDs beyond just the passport, and hand over their social media histories in order to enter the country. And this is also being negotiated with other ESTA countries as well. So the ESTA agreement isn't just unique to Australia.
Yeah, it's a pretty big change from case by case going to every single traveller. And so we know that Australians planning to travel into the US or around the US would be affected by this biometric sharing. But could this also affect Australians who aren't even considering travelling to the US?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned earlier that these changes are being applied to all ESTA countries. And some of those governments, particularly in the EU, are pushing back And so out of that dialogue, we are getting some pretty useful information. So the EU believes that the information of third-party nationals will also get hoovered up by the US. Also hoovered up would be the exchanges between citizens and family members. So if you have a family member who's considering going to the US, your data could also get hoovered up straight into the US and ICE's database.
Yeah, that is some pretty scary stuff. Well, thank you so much for explaining all of this information in an accessible way for people that may not know that this is going on, and it will affect everyone. So this is really important to know what's happening and know where your information is going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Well, that was Lucinda Thorpe from Digital Rights Watch, online privacy coordinator, speaking on the demands for more biometric data and digital identity documents to be shared between Australia and the United States government, and what this could mean for you and your privacy.
And up next, we're going to listen to a song. So the song is Aku Dia Dan Lagu, or Me, Them and Music, by legendary 60s Malay singer Saloma. So enjoy.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Hey everyone, this is Jen Clower. I'm here at 3CR, Radical Radio, and it's just a little reminder that you might have forgotten to subscribe, so why don't you do it now? Jump on the phone, 9419 8377, or online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe. Let's keep independent community radio alive.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinnan. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Jajarong, Kalkadoon and Yurundali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
DigiTube, people, place, language. Connecting stories, culture and language across Australia. Contribute your content in digitube.com.au. Sign up for a free account and select your options for streaming, download and broadcast promotion.
A 3CR supporter.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
Annabelle.
You're so smart, resilient and charming, Annabelle. You've built a life that looks more successful than you feel to survive. You need to keep pretending, Annabelle.
Was Annabelle by Jen Clower, and up next you'll be listening to an excerpt from Monday the 2nd of February, where Caitlin, one of the presenters of Breadline on 3CR, presented a short but detailed report on the robo-debt class action led by Gordon Legal. They explain the background to the case and why it has been significant for people affected by the scheme. Alongside outlining the legal action, Caitlin also spoke about their own experience with robo-debt and reflected more broadly on their interactions with the welfare system, offering listeners personal insight into the human impact behind it.
My name's Caitlin. I'm going to be chatting about life on welfare, the news, what's in the news, and your rights as a welfare recipient slash unemployed person, if that is your situation. This show, Breadline, is presented by the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. You can become a member if you would like by going to auw.org.au. I know I'm on welfare, and I didn't find the membership fees to be anything that was too strenuous. I mean, AUW membership is free, which is great. There's no application or other membership fees. You may be asked to clarify your eligibility, but also if you're a full-time worker and you just want to support unemployed, the unemployment union in solidarity, you can absolutely do that. If you're financially independent, you can afford it. You can sign up for a paid membership in solidarity. I mean, that would be really, honestly, really great to support your unemployment union. And make sure that welfare recipients and anyone who's unemployed or underemployed is, you know, getting the representation they need and getting support to know their rights and deal with all the bullshit that Centrelink throws at us on a daily basis. Speaking of bullshit that Centrelink throws at us, there has been some developments in the robo-debt saga. You probably remember that there was a robo-debt royal commission, and there were some lots came to light during that. I know myself, I was a survivor of robo-debt, and I joined the class action appeal. So now Gordon Legal, who's been handling the robo-debt class action, which is basically to get justice for people who were targeted by robo-debt, which was, of course, it's called robo-debt because it was basically an algorithm that was targeting people like welfare recipients. You didn't even have to be currently on welfare, on Centrelink. You know, even if you in the past had been on Centrelink, they were trying to come for you for money that the government thought you owed them from 7-10 years ago. I know for me, I was suddenly told that I had to go and hunt up pay slips from a casual job I worked like 8 years before that. And it was like, I was calling these old companies that I used to do really casual like work for, and they were like, we don't have those records, like, LOL, why would we still have that? And I was like, yeah, I know. But for some reason, the government thinks that I've tricked them. And so now I have to, the onus of the burden of proof is on me, a disabled, unemployed, very tired, poor person, to go and do the work that the paid government employees couldn't do. They outsourced it to the computer, to algorithms. And what they were doing was something called income averaging. So the reason I got scooped up, and a lot of people did, the reason I was told I had a false debt, which turned out it was inaccurate, I didn't actually owe any money. I'd never done anything wrong, and I've never done anything wrong in my life. But in this case, I really had evidence I hadn't. But what they did was they took the income that I had reported to the ATO for like the given year, and then they averaged that over 52 weeks. So then they came up with, I was getting a weekly income of, you know, like $153.20. Like, that's not the actual number, but that's the sort of thing they came up with. And then if they could find that I was for, like, let's say for 8 months of that year, I was receiving a welfare payment, the other 4 months I wasn't, they were still like, the 4 months I was able to work, they averaged that income across the whole 12 months. And then they said that during the 8 months I was on welfare, I had not been reporting this, you know, $153.20 a week that I, you know, like was, you know, apparently squirreling away. And, you know, I had to keep have all these long phone calls to Centrelink employees. Well, this is before I had heard the phrase robo-debt. This is before there was a big movement, a lot of knowledge about it. I was like, hey, I don't know why, but I think you guys, like, I actually figured it out myself just from doing lots of math. I was like, I think you guys just averaged the bit of money I made over that summer and you just averaged it across the whole year. But I wasn't earning that money, like the same amount of money every fortnight. I'm so sorry, but that's not how it works being unemployed or on, you know, very, very chronically ill with a dynamic disability and working casual jobs when I can. So this has happened to a lot of people, so much so that there was a royal commission and now there's a class action. So the reason I bring this up is because in November, a registration period opened up with Gordon Legal to join the class action against the robo-debt class action appeal, it's called. And so you may be entitled to compensation. So in the first class action, you could get a little bit of money, but it was more of like, it wasn't representative. The money that you were getting wasn't representative of the harm caused to you. It wasn't like justice. It was more like if you had wrongly, because the thing is, you know, for me and a lot of other people, if they thought you owed them money, they would just start taking the money out of your welfare payments, or they would send debt collectors after you. So they would just start taking the money from you. So a lot of people needed the class action compensation to recoup the money that they had lost when they were unfairly accused of having a debt. But this class action that Gordon Legal is doing now could be, it could entitle you to compensation for the stress that you've been through. This could be actual, like, you know, financial justice, maybe. So they're just asking people to register to participate in the settlement at the moment. I've already done it. It takes about, they say it takes about 15 minutes. I think it took me a little less. So I found out through a letter in my MyGov inbox, which of course is horrible to have to go look at MyGov. But if you want to check your inbox, then, or you could go to gordonlegal.com.au and look up their RoboDebt class action page, and then you can click on a button that says register now. And you can also, and if internet forms are not your thing, you can also call Gordon Legal on 1300 001 356. So just that number again for Gordon Legal is 1300 001 356, and you can do your registration for the RoboDebt class action over the phone. So there's lots of ways that you can get involved. And I guess, you know, it's up to you whether you want to get involved, whether you want to relive your RoboDebt trauma. But there is a chance of getting, you know, everybody sort of grouping together and maybe even getting some financial justice, some entitlement out of, some settlement out of this. So you have until the 6th of March. So you have another month to get it done. So I guess all I could say is, go and check your MyGov inbox if you have the iron will to do that, or, you know, go to Gordon Legal's website and see if you want to sign up.
That was Caitlin from Breadline reporting on the RoboDebt class action led by Gordon Legal and giving us insight on their own lived experiences with the welfare system.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Up next, we'll be listening to a song. This is Back of the Uber by Yara.
Back of the Uber, why do I want you so bad? Can't seem to care about anything else. When will you ask me to stay? Go home to wash off my time.
Listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Back of the Uber by Yara. And up next, on Sunday, I spoke to four artists currently exhibiting at Trocadero Projects, an artist-run space in Footscray. Creatives Namo Omar, Emma Salmon, Lara Olklu, and Alana Baxter spoke to me about their exhibition Suck Words into Grime, currently in its last week. So, we discuss the artists' individual practices, how their works explore and challenge systems of power and oppression. And this is part one of the conversation. Thank you guys so much for coming on Tuesday Breakfast today. So maybe to start off with, would you each be able to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourself as an artist, maybe starting with you, Namo?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nemo. I'm an emerging artist based in Nam, specifically Werribee, which is in the Melbourne's West. I work a lot with video, text, and sculpture specifically. And I'm really interested in the Black archives as well as process and reiteration. In terms of, you know, museological objects and, yeah, decolonialism, I guess.
Thanks. And what about you, Emma?
Yeah, I'm Emma. I'm a Nyugana woman, artist and student based on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Fawkner, so northern suburbs of Nam. My practice is very interdisciplinary. I go across string making, string harvesting, metalwork, printmaking, drawing, as well as set and costume design for theatre. I'm motivated by demystifying Indigenous identities and complicating and challenging settler Australian conceptions of land and history. Yeah, my practice ultimately seeks catharsis and healing in an intergenerational and present contemporary context.
And what about you, Alana?
Hi, my name is Alana. So I work and study and practice in Nam. It's a pretty expansive practice. I've worked primarily with text, I think is the through line for me, but I've worked across video and sculpture and performance. I think I'm really interested in unpacking spectatorship, the function it plays in audience relations and power relations specifically, and how to kind of break those open and try and unpack how and why we look at certain things, and really looking at like the nuance and the kind of like emotional weight that language can carry.
Yeah, fantastic. And Lara, do you want to go next?
My name is Lara. I typically work in, and I have like a painting practice. My through line would probably be like poetry and language and music and how I can blur or transfer those three into painting itself.
Yeah, awesome. I feel like, there's definitely like a lot of overlap in all of your practices, and particularly maybe with themes of language, and that maybe ties in a bit to the theme of the exhibition, Namo. So the exhibition is called Suck Words into Grime. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about what the theme means and kind of how that
goes across the different works.
Yeah, the title comes from a poem that I wrote, and it was primarily kind of about language and like the process of speech and vocality. And I feel like that is something that we all are very interested in, whether that's through the voice or through text and writing. But I think we're also all very process and reiteratively process based. Like things happen again and again, and we track those patterns. And so I kind of found that we all were interested in like these topics of writing text. And change as well, I think. Like the idea of like process being a transference or a transformation of something, or sitting in like a feeling that then ebbs into an artwork. And I think that's kind of seen in the way that we've installed the show as well. I think everything really speaks to each other, whether that's aesthetically or relationally or like materially. There's like a really, there's kind of a mix of everything. Thing is very materially important. But I'd also love to hear what the others think of the show as well.
Yeah, maybe Emma, do you want to speak a little bit to, maybe your work and how it explores those things?
I think the title to me is it's so visceral, you know, and I think when my work, how it relates to, you know, that line from your poem, Namer, of suck words into grime, I think, because I've done these prints, these screen prints onto pieces of fabric, and I'm using these magnets that have these kind of concrete fixtures on them with weld spatter, which was basically, those are like the kind of misfires or mistakes in the welding process that you take off your finished project, or you would normally angle grind them down to get a smooth surface on a metal object. But for me, I was really attracted to these little lumps and bumps and mistakes and errors, and so I kind of included them in these concrete magnets. And to me, they're kind of, the magnets then become these punctuation marks. The works become punctuated by something, you know, these works are about country and my relationship to cultural practice and weaving, right? And how, for me, my relationship towards those things is quite abstracted because of the legacies of colonization and stolen generations on my own family. Mm. And so the work, you know, these prints are about country and kind of trying to grapple with that, but they're always punctuated by concrete and my own relationship to being, you know, urban dwelling in a city. These magnets, the concrete, though, is coloured by red oxide, which is a naturally occurring chemical that happens when, the earth oxidises, and often it occurs when there's metal close to the proximity of the earth. And so that's, you know, that my country in a Kimberley, there's a lot of red dirt. And so I was kind of thinking about, you know, these punctuation marks, these gaps, these full stops or commas or whatever they are, being loaded with this relationship of industry and country, you know, concrete, metalworking, you know, the red dirt, the red earth. For me, that kind of grimy nature, that kind of entangled, very dense and complicated relationship, that feels like sucking words into grime. And I think a lot of my process, and possibly the other artists in the show, our process is a lot of, you know, Namo, you just mentioned the process of change or noticing patterns and wanting to transform them or track them. And I think for us, a lot of it is about trying to physicalize some kind of language or physicalize some kind of internal grappling. That was this work as well. I think this show is very poetic, and it's very fitting that the title of it comes from a line of Namo's poetry, and that the exhibition description uses Lara's poetry. Not only are we observing things like a poet would, or trying to track them and using language to do that, we're also looking at the form of how that language can be, and looking at, you know, what that shape can be or how that artwork looks. You know, Lara talks about, you know, can a poem become a painting or be transformed into that? So yeah, but that's my work.
thank you so much. And yeah, I'm interested as well, Lara, hearing about the fact that you write poetry, but then you're also making paintings. And I think I got the sense looking at your painting, you could kind of get this sense of like calligraphy or like writing through the painting.
Sure. I think what Emma was talking about, like the art metal being also like a point of error and punctuation, is also quite like interesting, because in the poem, like that's used as the description, part of it was like reflecting on stains or what could be considered like a national kind of error on when a state is like committing violence against its own people. I was like reflecting on that and how that then gets like memorialized or like remembered and passed down through language and like different forms of storytelling. So within my cultural background, folk songs and folk music is a very large tradition, and a lot of that like sorrow and like trying to grapple with complicated states of being is expressed through word and song. And so there's error in language, in punctuation, and then also in writing. When you're writing a poem, it's very different to like singing a song or trying to like transcribe a song. And like historically, lots of marginalized things crossed through. In
it's like they've been obscured or erased. Yeah,
that's what I was looking for. But for me, like the way that like comes through in like traditional like folk music is a bit different. So it's like almost like you're like from the name of the title, it's like you're breathing in, but once you breathe out, you're like releasing all that was passed down, presented with the ability to kind of see difference. You can relate to it more easily.
Yeah. So, and maybe it's kind of with like reckoning with something and kind of forming your own understanding of it. And
it also relates back to like how Nemo was talking about repetition and like the through lines. It's like once I see something in writing, I want to try and see if I can transcribe it elsewhere. I can hear a melody, and then when I'm painting, like the physical act of standing over a painting that's like on the floor, unstretched, I'm trying to see if I can track those notes and like the sequence of those notes in the movement as well. So
yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that really comes through in what your painting looks like as well. Like you can really see that musicality in it.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was part one of my conversation with four artists, Nemo, Emma, Lara and Alana, who are currently exhibiting a multidisciplinary show called Suck Words into Grime at Trocadero Projects. And we'll be back with part two after Letting Go by Jem Cassar Daly.
It was dawn and the night had gone to sleep. I was wrong, I should think before I speak. Why am I so emotional every time that I lose control? It was dawn, this ain't where I'm supposed to be. And you say, is everything okay? You look like you're falling apart in every single way. You say this feeling won't last forever. Time is all we have together. Let go of myself. Gotta let go of myself. Clouds will break from stormy weather. Things will change, but live forever. Thank you. everything okay? You look like you're falling apart in every single way. You say this feeling won't.
Listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Letting Go by Jem Casar Daly. And we're going to be back now with part two of a conversation with four artists, Namo Omar, Emma Salmon, Lara Olkalu, and Alana Baxter, who are talking about their exhibition Suck Words Into Grime and how their unique practices come together in this compelling show. And we're going to jump back into the artists talking about what the theme of the exhibition means and how they're exploring it in their work.
Maybe moving to you, Alana, your work, also plays with text, but I noticed it was like at the very back of particularly the first piece, the green kind of like corrugated one. So it's kind of not there when you first see it. Do you want to speak to your work?
When it comes to, the works with the green foam and the plywood, I was really interested in transforming the form and function of something, and like it has a specific setting and taking outside of that and recontextualizing it. And then what does that do? And the parts, they're actually what they're used for the lining at the top of a wall around a room.
Molding?
I think it's skirting. And then that foam is literally just came from a construction company, like a building company. And I liked this idea of, I was working with levels a lot and different heights and levels as this kind of expansion on class relations and power structures, particularly while we were, within an institution, and trying to, again, not defy that or flatten that, but somewhat problematize or just scrutinize more closely. So taking them from this flat plane and making them vertical. And it actually just came out of play that I realized that I could put them together in a way they started to look like a curtain. And curtains are something I've used a lot in my practice. And I'm really interested with theatre. And like theatre and film, which comes through in one of the aluminium works in the show, and how theatre and film and pop culture as a whole further very specific agendas and like very like fascistic agendas. As a culture, so increasingly aware of that, and yet they still are such a dominant force in pushing specific political ideology. And that being aware of it does not make you immune to it whatsoever. And that kind of cognitive distance that brings up. And I came back to having that kind of secret hidden moment behind the curtain, and that being, well, is that someone that's viewing the work getting to hide in there? Or in a theater, we see curtains open and something being revealed. But for me, it was a lot more about almost having somewhere to hide and having a moment of having that moment alone, I think. And it was really important to me that the text was quite hidden, and you might see it, you might not. And that it came from script writing, that often open bracket, a beat, close bracket is used in a text to push an actor to make a certain move that portrays something, and that it's text that's actually there to communicate something unspoken. And I thought, again, that was a really interesting kind of paradox.
Yeah, and I feel like across all of your works, there is this kind of like interplay between different forms of media and art. Talking about film and also theatre, I think, was it Emma was mentioning your involvement in theatre before. And yeah, it's interesting how you all kind of, but I'd be interested, Nemo, looking at your work, I noticed you've sort of created these, like, you've got these surfaces that then have like a script that you've, that's kind of raised up off it. Yeah, if you could speak a little bit about what is the script that you've got on there and what's it exploring?
The script is from a Somali alphabet that I was researching for the, I've been researching for like the last year, I guess. It's a decommissioned alphabet that was in use for 50 years from the 20s to the 70s. And in like Somali literary and language context, like written alphabets are not a common thing, and like Somali orality and oral culture are very important, like poetry being a very kind of natural and normal way of speaking every day is an important part of like I guess our national identity. And I was really interested in this attempt at a decolonial and like resilient act of trying to at first like be proximate to powers that they kind of thought were superior to them, but also trying to like actively historicize their own kind of events and like histories and traditions, etc. basically. And I wanted to kind of, I was interested in that being archivable and me not really being able to find a lot of information on it. And also the way that colonial efforts like and decolonial efforts have been portrayed in Western archives. So I replicated the, well, I transcribed this poem by a decolonial revolutionary called Sayyid Abdullah Hassan, who fought against the British. And I transcribed sections of his poem on two of these tablets that are supposed to be reminiscent of a Somali writing board that is usually used in like religious contexts for transcribing the Quran, the Islamic text. And so I reappropriated that to transcribe a decolonial and a active resistance against colonial forces. There's like the idea of reiteration and replication and how that affects the archives and what it means to replicate a artifact and what it means to kind of represent a alphabet that was actively suppressed and how to reckon with it when coming into contact with Somali poetry, which is extremely oral and isn't usually transcribed. And so it was kind of this, yeah, like this discussion of language, transcription and resisting against archival strategies of like making artifacts and languages and cultures completely obsolete and obscured. And yeah, I still don't know if I did it right, which is not like something that you should, I don't know, resolutely say about art, but I think it's something that I'm really interested in and will continue to be interested in because it's such an unrepresented like history in Somali colonial like events, I guess, and like how much it mattered at the time, and it still kind of does in the Somali diaspora. But yeah, if that made any sense.
I think it was, I was really wondering when I was looking at it, couldn't figure out where the script was from. And I think, there's something really, I think, powerful as well about, making, like using the script in your contemporary practice and giving new meaning to it as well. And like, and as you said, kind of, maybe creating a record of it that's not in these, you know, colonial archives as well. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm really I think struck by everyone's work and all the kind of research and process that's gone into it. We're probably running out of time, so I might just to wrap up, Nemo, if you could just talk a little bit about where people can go to find out more about the exhibition.
We had, well, there's the exhibition summary, which is Lara's excellent poem that I think is available on the Trocadero website.
Yeah, you can find the show at Trocadero Projects in Footscray and how important that space is for emerging artists, established artists to have a gallery like that in the western suburbs when so much of NAM's creative scene seems to be Brunswick dominant and Northside dominant. It's very important to have that space out there. And yeah, so seeing it in person at Trocadero.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for taking the time to chat today. I really appreciate it.
We've been speaking to artists Nemo, Emma, Lara and Alana, who are currently exhibiting Suck Words into Grime at Trocadero Projects, showing until Sunday, 22nd of February at Level 1 Level 1 at 40 Leeds Street in Footscray. And to find out more about the exhibition, you can head to trocaderoprojects.org.au or at Trocadero Projects on Instagram. You can also follow the artists at Name Omar, which is NAM0MAR, and at E_Salmon, at Lara Oloklu, and at 10 Regent Court, and we'll have this information in the show notes as well.
And coming up on events this week, we have the Footscray Community Response Speak Out at 5:45 p.m. on Tuesday, the 17th of February at Marbenong Town Hall before the Marbenong Council meeting as featured last week. And we have the Congee Social Club, which will be hosting a Queer Lunar New Year celebration this Sunday from 12 to 6 p.m. at Balam Balam Palace in Brunswick. There will be music and performances, stalls, clothing swaps, crafting table, and of course, mahjong. Tickets are available via their Instagram at Congee Social Club, and 50% of all ticket sales will go to mutual aid. And then we have the Suck Words into Grime at Trocadero Projects showing until the 22nd of Feb at Level 1, 40 Leeds Street, Footscray.
Had a really massive show today, so just quickly to summarize, firstly, Fung spoke to Murray Party from Footscray Community Response to discuss the security patrol's targeting of women in the Footscray area, as well as tonight's Speak Out in Maribyrnong Town Hall. Then Elena spoke to Lucinda Thorpe from Digital Rights Watch about proposed biometric data and digital identity document sharing between the Albanese government and the Trump administration. Then we heard an excerpt from Breadline on Monday, 2nd of Feb, with Caitlin presenting a short but detailed report on the robo-debt class action. And then finally, we spoke to four artists who are exhibiting at Trocadero Projects, Nemo, Emma, Lara and Alana, about their exhibition Suck Words into Grime. I think that's all we have time for, but thank you so much for listening.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.